Morning, everyone. I will call this hybrid meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee for May 4th to order. This hearing is taking place pursuant to Rule 10.01 and can also be viewed on the House webcast. Ms. Anna, please take the roll.
Chair Moran. Vice Chair Olson.
Present.
Representative Garofalo.
Present.
Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Becker Finn. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Hassan. Representative Hertas.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Hornstein, present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Kreshaw.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Liebling, present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Mariani. Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Miller.
Present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Knorr.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski, present.
Representative Petersburg.
Here.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you. Schumacher, present.
Representative Schultz.
Schultz, present.
Representative Scott.
Here.
Representative Sundin.
Sundin, present.
And Representative Moran.
Present.
Present.
Representative Becker Finn.
Becker Finn, present.
Representative Hassan. And Representative Mariani. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
A quorum is present, and so our first order of business is approval of the minutes from our previous hearing. The minutes were provided in member packets and posted online. Can I get a motion for approval of the minutes?
Madam Chair, I'll make that motion, but I do have a question about the minutes.
Okay, go for it, Representative Garofalo. Hey,
Madam Chair, I have not noticed this before, but I didn't realize that we had abstentions in when we were voting. I thought that you were either aye or nay or excused. I've never noticed we have abstentions. Is that a new thing?
Great question, Representative Garofalo. I'll actually ask Mr. Sullivan if he could assist in this for abstentions on the minutes, abstentions from votes.
Madam Chair and members, I'm really not sure. That's not an issue that I've thought much about or looked into recently, so I'm sorry I can't be much help on that. Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm not in favor nor against. Mm-hmm. I haven't noticed it before. I thought maybe giving you. Yeah, I could abstain from it too, I guess I could.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. We can certainly look into that and get back to you. Can I get a motion, or you made the motion to approve the minutes as well, didn't you?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, so the motion is before us. All those in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So we have two bills on the agenda today, and we have a little less than an hour to get through those. But before we do that, we have to amend the budget resolution. So I will bring the 2022 budget resolution coded Bud Res 04-2 as amended last week back before the committee. So we'll have Chair Moran please proceed.
Madam Chair, I know that
Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, I know that Martine was saying there's problems with the sound. Are we sure it's all working properly?
Okay. We'll take a moment.
It is working now?
Yeah, when the Zoom started, it was muted.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like we had some issues with the technology, but it's all up and running. So, Chair Moran, could you proceed with the budget resolution amendment?
Madam Chair, she's muted.
Oh, she is muted. So, Chair Moran, if you'd like to unmute, please.
You know, Madam Chair, Representative Moran and I talked last night about this.
Representative Garofalo.
And she mentioned that her budget resolution, what she wanted to do was on page one, she wanted to reduce the total amount of money for the general fund, and then she wanted to increase the amount for the Workforce Development Fund.
Representative Garofalo will let her come off mute and explain the budget resolution amendment.
I just thought you'd, if you want to move it and pass it, you can.
Representative, we'll hold. So Chair Moran's having some technology difficulties there, so we'll hold for just a second here.
Madam Chair, if you want to pass the resolution, if you want to move it, it's okay.
Great. So we will go ahead and we will, it seems like she's having some technology difficulties. So with Representative
Chair,
Thank
you. I am so sorry. I am having some technical problems, but I would like to bring the 2022 budget resolution code at BuzzRed 04-2 as amended last week back before the committee.
So okay. Members, Chair Marianne, would you explain the A01 amendment?
Yeah, so the A01 amendment does two things. It decreases the net general fund spending by $311 million, which in part reflects the lower spending contained in the UI Frontline Worker Conference Committee passed into law, and it increases the target for workforce development by $161.7 million. So on the associated spreadsheet, in addition to those two changes, I will also note that additional bills have been added in the other bills category to account for bills that have passed or moved out to the floor since the last revision. So I would defer to Mr. Hagemeyer for additional explanation if he would like to comment.
Mr. Hagemeyer, do you have anything further to add?
Madam Chair, I think Chair Moran summarized that very nicely.
Great, thank you. Great, so do we have any discussion to the A01 amendment? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, I know this is not a tails target, but I would point out that we are overspending. They will have a problem when we come back next biennium by $1.32 billion.
Further discussion to the A01 amendment. Chair Moran, any final word on the A01 amendment?
No, let's go vote.
Okay, very good. So the A1 amendment is before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So next we're on to our bills for today. So the first is House File 2725. Representative Edelson, and I believe it's going to be co-presented with Representative Albright. Welcome to the committee, Representative Edelson. So, members, this bill has been through three different committees and came to us from the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Albright is the second author. So, would you like to move that House File 2725 be recommended for placement on the General Register to get the bill before the committee?
Madam Chair, that is my motion.
Great. And Representative Edelson, I understand that the bill has been a work in progress and you have a couple of author's amendments to get the bill in the shape you would like to present it. So, Representative Albright, would you like to move the DE3 amendment for the author?
Madam Chair, I would move the DE3 amendment before the committee.
Wonderful. Great. So, Representative Albright and Representative Edelson, please explain the amendment and then you have one more amendment as well. Do you want to move that at the same time? Or do you want to explain the DE3 first?
Madam Chair, I think it would be appropriate if we explain the bill first because the conversation would be pertinent to DE3 and then we'll move the A3 after that.
Okay, sounds great. So go ahead and explain the DE3 and then we'll make sure to get the A3 before us after we do that description. So Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair and members, the DE3 represents the compromise agreement with language changes that we had. So we would appreciate members' support of this bill.
Further discussion to the DE3. Okay, so we will move to the A3 amendment to the D3. Representative Albright, would you move that amendment?
Madam Chair, I move the A3 amendment at this time.
Great. So Representative Albright, Edelson, please go ahead and explain the amendment to the amendment.
Madam Chair, the A3 amendment is the fiscal side of the appropriation for House File 2725. This comes after a concerted effort in understanding the mechanisms that abound in 2725, and it reflects the revised fiscal note that we have before the committee this morning.
Great. So we have the A3 amendment to the DE3 amendment. Discussion to that. Okay. All those in favor of the A3, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, aye. Please say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment to the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So you can proceed with your discussion. Thanks, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good morning. House Bill 2725 is a result of comprehensive work done by the Community Competency Restoration Task Force that was created by the legislature in 2019. This included 25 members of appointees that were organizations and government entities that included the Sheriff's Association, NAMI, County Attorney, State Court Administration, DHS, the Board of Public Defense, counties, amongst others. I want to specifically thank Sue Abderholden from NAMI, as well as Ryan Flynn from the County Attorney's Office, who is here today. Their collaboration in this process has been invaluable. The issue this bill seeks to address are gap cases. This is when a person commits a crime, but is not competent to stand trial, but also does not meet civil commitment standards. A judge may currently order treatment, but there is no oversight program to ensure that a person adheres to this order. The judges are limited in many ways, including ordering medication. This bill seeks to fill that gap. We have a gap in treatment and public safety in the state of Minnesota, and this is a bridge to that gap. This legislation will absolutely protect public safety as well as the gap in treatment. We have heard from judges, county attorneys, law enforcement, therapists and clinics, hospitals and treatment staff, all who have seen gap cases come through a revolving door, in one day, out the next, back a week later. Family members have been asking for help. The court system is unable to respond in a way that is meaningful because of the lack of infrastructure that we have in the state of Minnesota. I spoke with one judge off the record that said, please do anything you can to help us. What we are doing now costs our state a great deal due to the strain on this overall system that is not set up to help people. Madam Chair, I would like to yield my time to Representative Albright, my partner and co-author in this important legislation.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, the legislation before you this morning seeks to address what we know as gap cases by doing the following. Establishing standards to assess a person's competency to stand trial and process for restoring a person to competency. Creates a board for competency restoration and a position of forensic navigators to work with defendants in the competency process and develop plans to connect defendants to appropriate services. This board mirrors that of the Guardian Ad Litem's board. The legislation also gives judges more discretion to order treatment and medication. The navigators created within this legislation would ensure orders and treatment are being followed. This is absolutely an issue as a state that we must address. As many of you have seen over the previous several months, Care 11 has done many stories on gap cases that are heartbreaking. And again, this evening, another story will be coming out about a man who lost his life because a neighbor ran him over. The same man who was provisionally discharged weeks earlier. This man would have met the qualifications to have support provided to him had the Navigator program that is inherent to this bill had been in place. There are many, many stories such as this of people left behind, families asking for help that have not been addressed. There have been many changes to this legislation that have occurred over the past 4 months. And today what sits before you is a better bill because of the feedback that we have received from the members of this committee and the other members of the committees that it has passed through, and from the stakeholders, who are many and have been already identified. The preliminary fiscal implications to establish this infrastructure for our state are as follows. An estimated $9.5 million for forensic navigator staff, competency restoration of board staff, which will include two managers and eight supervisors. The total cost of the forensic navigator program is $11.3 million for the first year, and each subsequent year the program will be estimated to cost $10.9 million. There is also a $5 million appropriation for additional competency exams, which the court will receive through these funds. Members, we will stand for questions, but I would yield back to my co-author, Representative Edelson, to complete our presentation. Thank you.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The fiscal note before you left out the cost of competency restoration education, and I just want to alert members to that. We did have a call yesterday to discuss this. There was $3 million, which was projected, but we assumed that was on the high side, $3,500 for each person to go through this education. We thought the estimate was high after consulting with county attorneys, DHS, NAMI. We had a call yesterday. There was consensus with that. We believe some of the other assumptions are on the high side as well. So we decided that the amount that we have within this bill is a great place for us to get started to fill this gap. So the $11.3 million will be enough, we believe. We want to thank members on this body, specifically Jamie Becker-Finn, Chair Becker-Finn, Chair Johnson, and let's see who else is on here, Representative Scott as well, I know that are on this committee, for all of their work and feedback, as well as Representative O'Neill. I know that this is an issue you care about as well. So with that, Madam Chair, we stand for questions.
Thank you for the presentation and all of your work. I know this was a work in progress up till the last minute, so thank you for everything you're doing regarding this issue. So members, the revised fiscal note is in the packet, and as amended, this bill has no impact on the budget resolution, so just want to make members aware of that. So questions and discussion to the DE3 as amended. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and knowing the work that it takes to have all the stakeholders on the table, I know the work, so my questions are meant to be gentle. And the one question I have is not exactly fiscal, but since this is the first time I've seen it, it's a simple question. I hope you're getting some latitude. This bill, I'm sure it's because it was a compromise work with the stakeholders, but it's an incredibly prescriptive bill. Like, it basically spells out what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. Typically, we empower an agency or a couple agencies, and then they kind of put the things together. So I just want to be clear on this, that the people that are going to be doing this work in state government, they're good with what they're seeing here. I guess that is a question. I hope you heard my question. Are they okay with that?
Representative Edelson.
Chair Olson, Representative Miller, we are creating an absolutely new navigator is a position that doesn't exist. So unfortunately, we felt we needed to be prescriptive in this to make sure that we knew exactly what this job would entail. So yes, all the stakeholders are in agreement that this is what the navigator and the navigator board, our competency restoration board, would be tasked with, because this is the gap that we are seeing right now in our current system.
Okay. Representative Miller.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I'm okay with that. I just know that my experience with criminal law and such, they tend to not like us telling them how to do it. And actually, to my frustration, as a commentary, there are times where we can't get things done because they say, well, it doesn't work this way, and then they don't do anything about it. So I appreciate that you had to be prescriptive, just as long as people are on board. My fiscal question, you sort of answered this, Representative Edelson, but this is the Ways and Means Committee, and we have an undefined appropriations in this. I know we have a fiscal note, and I heard that you say that you have a pretty good feel for what it is that you're going to be needing for this. And so I'm okay with that, but I will tell you that if we're going before Ways and Means and approving money, if you will, through this committee, we should probably know what it is that we're approving. I'm not going to make a big deal about it now, but I I'm a little bit uncomfortable, but not a lot of bit uncomfortable with that. So just, I would assume and appreciate, but that by the time this gets to the floor and we speak about it on the floor, you'll have that number. You'll have that by then.
Representative Edelson, and I just note that we did adopt the A3 already, which maybe you'll talk a little bit about that.
Go ahead. And I thought they had said, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Miller, the A3 actually identifies the appropriation.
The actual number.
Itself.
I apologize. Kind of over missed that. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's no doubt that something needs to be done about this issue. And just over the interim, met with some county attorneys, met with DHS. Kind of nobody wanted to take responsibility for this. And so my question right now is, who is responsible right now for when DHS provisionally discharges someone? Is that addressed in this bill? Because I didn't see it.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott, right now, if a person's provisionally discharged, they may not actually have following. However, in the bill before you, if that happens, a navigator would be appointed at that point. So there would be a following, which is again, a part of the gap that we're trying to build a bridge to.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that the committee was aware of that. Representative Edelson, how many navigators do you expect to hire with the amount in the fiscal note here that's allotted for that?
Representative Edelson?
Chair Olson, Representative Scott, the fiscal note puts enough for 127 FTE forensic navigators. And I do, as I had mentioned in the opening comments, I do think that's high necessarily, but we are, again, balancing out the fact that the educational component is not. So we, in one of the amendments we adopted, we made sure that the appropriation, the funds that we are allocating, could be used for educational purposes as well as staff. 127 would be the number. We have 10 judicial districts. That would be 12 per judicial district. But I think some areas will obviously need more than others.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Edelson, could you tell the committee approximately how many people per year you're expecting that might go through this process? How many folks that might fall in this category?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to back up a little bit and add a little color to the previous question by Representative Scott before I answer her next question. One of the things about this program that we all recognize is that this is a new build-out of a program that will take time. And so the fiscal note recognizes the full build out of that. We would anticipate that the first year will be spent with an immense amount of effort being put into what that forensic navigator curricula looks like, as well as the type of positions and people that would fill those. The full build out will take some time. So just recognizing that. To the point of her next question, about the number of people that we would anticipate seeing walk through this program. It's roughly about 1,100 people.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, Representative Albright and Representative Edelson. I do have a question on line 11.11 through 11.12, and it's speaking to when they're going to, discharge one of these individuals, and it lists all the people that need to be notified, the prosecutor, defense counsel, any entity responsible for the supervision of the defendant prior to any planned discharge. And I wonder if any thought was given to, if there's a victim in this case, in these cases, if the victims, we might want to add something there about the victims being notified that this person is going to be released.
Representative Edelson or Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Scott. And that would be up and charged with responsibility of the prosecutor.
Representative Scott.
Okay, thanks. And just some kind of, well, one last question then a comment. Is there current curriculum, this bill talks a lot about curriculum that these navigators will be trained in. Is there current curriculum that is being used, or is that going to be something that has to come from scratch as well?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott, there is a skeleton of a curricula that would be used based upon conversations with other states. It is not as robust as we as a state would like to see it, and so that's where we will start from and build that out going forward.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright and Representative Edelson. I think this is a really important work that's been done. I do have concerns that we're biting off an awful lot and expect this all the ducks to be in a row by January, which seems like a really short period of time for something kind of as complex as this. I'm also concerned with our current workforce shortage that we're going to be able to find people to fill the positions of navigators that are needed. So I think it's a good start, and at a very minimum, you know, if we don't reach that January deadline, I think something needs to be in place to kind of to fill the gap for the gap cases, and maybe just requiring DHS at least to follow up on these people might be kind of a plan B, if you will, if we aren't able to get everything in place. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to ask my question.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Olson, Representative Edelson, Representative Albright, I want to thank you for this bill. Law enforcement has been screaming for help for decades. In my career, I can name the 8 to 10 people that we dealt with every month that this program would have worked. We knew their names, their date of birth, everything. Just by a description, we knew who we were going to be seeing because it was a revolving door. Usually every 3 to 6 months, we were dealing with these individuals. I like the concept that's going on here. I hope it works. I do believe we need to watch it close. Because in the next couple of years, we're probably going to have to do some tweaks to it because we want to make sure that we're doing it right. But I want to thank you for tackling this very difficult subject. The only concern I have is on this, dealing with the medications, with the Jarvis ruling, how that's going to apply to make sure that these individuals are taking their medications.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you both for bringing this forward. I'm trying to do a quick side-by-side. I'm a little uncomfortable doing such a massive DE in Ways and Means. I know we do it. I'm really, really uncomfortable with it. This is every single word in this bill really, really matters. And I would point to in the DE, line 3.1 through 3.8, when we're changing the definition of what mental illness is considered, which is literally the trigger for this entire program, and I see that you've drastically changed, in my view, drastically changed the definition from the underlying bill to the DE. Again, I don't really want to talk about all this stuff in Ways and Means because we don't have a lot of our experts that we should have here when we're talking about doing big sweeping changes to the bill. But if you could just briefly explain the change between the prior definition of mental illness and the current definition of mental illness, because again, this is one of the most critical parts of the bill because that's the trigger for them to start this process.
Representative Edelson.
Chair Olson, Representative O'Neill. The mental illness definition was agreed upon with clinicians as well as NAMI, as well as county attorneys, and just finding middle ground on this. I do know that Ms. Abderholden is on the call if we wanted to ask her to expand upon that.
Ms. Abderholden from NAMI, are you on the call and would you like to comment on the definition of mental illness?
Madam Chair, I do not see her on the call.
Okay. Representative Edelson.
Chair Olson. I also have Elliot here from NAMI that could probably come up and speak to this.
Okay. Great. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Elliot Butai. I'm the criminal justice coordinator at NAMI Minnesota. And yes, we did work with clinicians, forensic psychologists on the definition. I think it's a very specific definition because the law says that if a person's found incompetent due to a mental illness or a cognitive impairment, so we need to be really clear about those things. And sometimes they do get messy with substance use disorder or so I think it just has to be a very pointed definition to match with the law and what the examiners are looking for.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I can see that in the definition change. I guess what I'm asking is you went from diagnostic codes published by the Commissioner of Human Services, which is very defined, to a much less defined in some ways, to being a little more broad as to what mental illness is, but then you were more explicit as to what mental illness is not. And I'm wondering if you could just tell us now who is included. Because that's really important, because that's the trigger for to start this whole process, is that that's a finding.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill. I might need to check with the clinicians, honestly. I do think that broadening it makes it catch more people rather than tying it to the diagnostic codes. It's not my understanding that a person actually has to be diagnosed. It just has to be the examiner just needs to determine that they're incompetent for one reason or another. I think I have to get back to you, actually.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, one of the facets of to your question about the codes that recognize the previous mental health definition, those pertain more to reimbursement in terms of for insurance coverage, as well as diagnostic appreciation for what next steps would pertain to that patient as they present themselves in a medical setting. When we're dealing with a person who, again, presents themselves in front of a court of law, that definition sometimes does not reckon with the dilemma that a court system might be presented with as a person who has been charged with a specific offense. ICD codes don't typically work as well in a judicial setting as they would in a medical setting, and so broadening that to Mr. Boutet's remarks encompass a broader number of individuals who are not looking for reimbursement for a treatment per se at that time, but they're looking for an identification in terms of what next steps necessarily need to be taken in order to recognize whether or not they are able to stand for competency, are competent and able to stand for trial for the offenses charged with them or not. And in this case, what we're trying to do is avail as many people as possible to not only their due process rights, but also to medical treatment that would enable them to find the help and the treatment that they might need in order to stand trial or to move forward in the process of evaluation.
And I'll just remind members not to stymie conversation, but just as an awareness that we have a hard stop shortly before 9:30. So just for awareness. So Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I completely understand that. And that is why I am really uncomfortable with these massive DEs that come in that have big policy. If the policy was essentially the same and they were just changing the numbers, I would have less of a concern. But when I see this big change to the definition of mental illness coming to Ways and Means, I have a problem with that. I won't belabor that point anymore. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with this because I just wanted to know who is included, right? I mean, it's in the underlying bill, it's specific to diagnostic codes, which I understand is very, very broad. The DSM-5 is very, very broad. Probably most of us in this room would have some categorization from DSM-5. That is not who you're trying to capture. I understand that, but I think that this isn't the place to make that big sweeping change. That's all I'm saying. I also wanted to talk about the targeted misdemeanor. If you could just briefly explain, because that's another really important thing that especially Representative Albright and I have talked about when it comes to a bill that I had done regarding what happened in my community. I'm not going to go into that whole story, but the short answer is somebody that was mentally incompetent to stand trial, was not held accountable, did not go before the court. There was not a finding of mental incompetence, so he was legally able to possess a firearm and killed somebody. So I want to make absolutely sure that in this bill, and I realize targeted misdemeanor would cover his specific case and others like him, and it's a little bit more broad than that as well, which I do appreciate. But can you just walk through very briefly the process of somebody with a misdemeanor? Because that seems to be something that is lost the most. People with misdemeanors, and when there's a report that comes back of a finding of mental, not a finding, there's a report of mental incompetence to stand trial, there's not a judicial finding, and the misdemeanor is dismissed, and they just sort of go off into the world, and we don't know where they are, what they're doing, and they are legally able to possess a firearm unless there's another court order to the contrary. So can you just briefly talk about what this bill does in that situation with someone that has, like, a violation of HRO or OFP or DANCO that triggers a misdemeanor, and what does this do differently than what's happening right now?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill. So the misdemeanors, we initially started off with being included within this bill. However, throughout the process, we looked at other states. DHS specifically had saw that just including misdemeanors by themselves was actually not as productive, and it actually diluted the program to some extent. So what we did here is we do include targeted misdemeanors, which just so everybody knows, targeted misdemeanors would be maybe a domestic assault, a fifth degree assault, driving while impaired, something of that nature. So with that, we have included those. And in that instance, there would be a navigator that would be appointed for targeted misdemeanors. Now, what happened, Representative O'Neill, in Buffalo, I genuinely am trying to figure that out. I have Mrs. Haas that's here, and she knows, as well as Mr. Flynn from the County Attorneys Association. We are trying to figure out what happened in your situation and what happened in your city. But I can't speak to it. I don't have all of the details.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I did have a conversation with them before coming to the committee, and I'm not going to we can have an offline conversation about what actually happened in my district. But from my reading and from talking with the experts, it seems that it does cover that situation. It's not as direct. With my bill, it's not as direct, but I think it gets there. And I think what's more important is that all city and county attorneys will be going through an education process and understand the gravity of those decisions. If they are just going to dismiss based on a report and not allow the court to have a judicial finding, because it's the judicial finding that triggers the prohibited person statute. And that's what did not happen. And I believe that through this process, the court will now be making a finding of mental incompetence. That triggers everything. It triggers the navigator. It triggers prohibited person. So someone that truly is dangerous will not be allowed to purchase and possess weapons. So I believe that this covers it. I believe that's what they had told me offline. But, again, we've got some pretty big changes in the DE, so I haven't had the chance to dig in really, really deep. I know it's discussed on page 4 and page 8, and I believe it gets to that concern that my community has. And obviously, that's not a unique situation. Mm-hmm. So as we have more and more challenges in the courts with those with mental illness of all different types, it is a growing problem. So I believe it is addressed, but thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to, for the record, this was, I think, the only bill we did this with in the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee where I actually had this bill come back to us twice. So it started out with us. It went to some other committees and then came back to us because it is a big deal. And we did recognize how important this was. And so I did want to, you know, for folks who don't serve on Judiciary for folks to know that we did vet this bill quite a bit because it is that important. And then just wanted to say that I think right now the current system is not working. We can all agree that the current system as it is not working. And every year that we wait to do something, we are going to have more of these cases of these gap cases and frankly, you know, preventable bad things from happening to people. And so I think this bill is a really great example of, you know, I think Representative Edelson, Representative Albright, very much a, you know, it's a nonpartisan issue. And so there is bipartisan work being done to fix this problem. Is it a perfect bill? No, none of our bills are perfect, but it's a good bill. And I think it'll definitely move us in the right direction. And I hope that folks can support it today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have two more members on the list, and then we'll move to a vote after that so that we have time to do Chair Murphy's bill today as well. So Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representatives Adelson and Albright, for addressing this issue. I've heard so often from many of my local police departments the issues of catch and release and recidivism. We've all tried to do things in our time here. I also can share a story like Representative O'Neill with regard to things that happen in your own district and the loss of life because people should not have been on the street. A question I have with regard to the navigators and the assumptions in this report, obviously it makes some assumptions about 87 counties and 25% of county jails might have programs or whatnot. I would presume that there's a mechanism to make sure that the allocation of resources provides some continuity throughout the state. We have, you know, our most populous counties right here in the metro, seven county metro region, and I would presume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that probably much of the resources would be dedicated here in the metro region, but I am concerned about mental illness has no boundaries, and certainly in rural areas there's going to be needs as well. So I'm presuming that these individuals would be transferred to these jails, which have become our mental health institutions over the last several decades since the closure of state hospitals. And so I guess I just was wondering if you could just address a little bit how the program will be somewhat uniformly allocated so that the entire state can get help rather than just maybe where the most amount of people live.
Representative Albright, just
thank
please.
You, Madam Chair. Representative Hertas, thank you for the question. I think the one dynamic that we wanted to make sure was embodied in the legislation in the DE was a recognition that no two counties are the same and no two areas of the state are the same or similar. And so while we are developing a template via curriculum as well as the foundational elements for these forensic navigators and also the recognition for the court system and the county-based health services to be aware of these services, each one of the counties will very likely create its own system and its own means of providing for these services, and with the understanding that they may expand or contract based upon the demand placed upon them. We recognize that there are, if you will, hot spots within the state that will require more services versus those that may not require or may share those services with other counties, and so that the fluidity of the resources available to the counties is very much a part of the DE.
Great, thank you. So Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Edelson, you and Representative Albright have done a good job laying out the need for these services. As the Chair correctly mentioned, there's no impact on the budget resolution, but it is in the tails. I'm just wondering, has anyone had any conversations about budgetary offsets to pay for this, any other cuts in other areas?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. That will be a conversation that we will undertake, but at this time we have not done so.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, seeing no further, and I know you've worked really hard on this and want to see it moving, so we'll just proceed to a vote if that's okay with both of you.
Madam Chair, brevity is our friend right now, so thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So seeing no further discussion, we still need to adopt the amendment as amended. So all those in favor of the amended amendment, please say aye. Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment is adopted. So to seeing no further discussion on the bill is amended, I will renew the original motion that House File 4670 as amended be recommended for placement on the General Register. So Ms. Borgerding.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, you just said the 4670 and we're on 2725.
I apologize. I was looking ahead. So 2725 as amended is before us, and so be recommended for placement on the General Register. So House File 2725 as amended.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Moran. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo, no.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi.
Sorry. Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Fasan. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, aye.
Hertas, aye. Representative Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Krisha.
Krisha, aye.
Krisha, aye. Representative Liebling.
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani. Representative Marquardt.
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller.
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash.
Nash, aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor.
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Plowski.
Plowski, aye.
Plowski, aye. Representative Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott.
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin.
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. Okay. Chair Moran.
Aye.
Moran, aye. Representative Fasan.
Hassan excused.
Hassan excused. And Representative Mariani. Madam Chair, that is 25 ayes and 2 nays.
There being 25 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails and House File 2725 as amended is recommended for placement on the General Register. So thank you both, and you're on your way.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
So the final bill on the calendar for or on our agenda for today is House File 4670, which is the claims bill. We have about 10 minutes to get through this, so we will try to proceed expeditiously. So as the chair makes her way up to the table, I will move that House File 4670 be recommended for placement on the General Register. And there is also an author's amendment, so I'll also move the A22-0460 amendment. So welcome to the committee, Chair Murphy, and we appreciate you being here and getting this bill in the last 10 minutes here. So if you go ahead and explain the 046 amendment, and then we'll get the bill in the shape that you would like and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Claims Committee is a subcommittee of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which is made up of members of both the House and the Senate. And this Claims Subcommittee usually just considers the claims that have been made to the state in the Department of Corrections and Department of Human Services or any agency, but predominantly Human Services and Corrections. There are many claims the claims are usually brought to us in binders about 3 weeks before the claims committee subcommittee is to meet the first time of the year. And it is up to the three members of the House and the three members of the Senate to review those claims that have been made by usually people that are served by the Department of Corrections and the Department of Human Services. And in some way or another, the individuals that did not receive the proper service of their belongings. And so there's a lot of tennis shoes that have been stolen or lost. There's TVs that are broken or lost. There are just personal items, books that they had and then disappeared. Pages and pages in these huge binders. And the subcommittee picks the ones that are recommended to them by our council. And our council, to the subcommittee is Revisor Jason Keenley, and at the present time. He works with someone from the Department of Corrections and someone from the Department of Human Services that have pre-reviewed and made recommendations to the subcommittee. And then in one or two meetings, the subcommittee meets and decides how they're, which cases are going to take and which they're not. Last year, I was caught unaware. Excuse me.
Chair Murphy, would you mind speaking to, I know we're on a time crunch and I know you want to get your bill out of here and not have to come back. So will you speak to the -0460 amendment, make sure we get that covered?
Yes.
Thank you.
Because last year, I was taken aback on the floor of the House when I presented the bill because there was questions about the process that were made. And the LCC has done nothing about addressing the process. And certainly the subcommittee can't do that. And so as a result of that, yesterday I was right on time. I went down to the representative that had suggested that the process should be corrected. Last year and said, we have the claims bill up again tomorrow and I need to know right now if we're going to have the same problem that existed, even though all the claims from last year and all the claims from this year were in the bill and unanimously voted for by the subcommittee. And I got back. The person I talked with got back to me later, and said, "Yes, we have a problem. The problem still exists that existed last spring, and so we have no problem with the exonerations. And so the amendment is before you to approve the exoneration reports of the three people that made their case before the subcommittee, and the subcommittee would like that. And I would like the amendment to pass so those three cases can be settled."
Very good. So any discussion to the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted and the amended bill is before us. Any discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing no discussion, a 30-second closing last word, Chair Murphy.
Thank you very much for your consideration.
Great, wonderful. Thank you. I apologize for the rush, but I think we're going to get it done. So I will renew my motion that House File 4670 as amended be recommended for placement on the general register. So Ms. Borgerding, please take the roll.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Chair Moran.
Aye.
Moran, aye. Representative Garofalo.
Pass.
Representative Garofalo, pass. Representative Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan. Hassan, excuse. Representative Furtas.
Aye.
Furtas, aye. Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Bornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreshaw?
Kreshaw, aye.
Kreshaw, aye. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani, excuse. Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
Aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Pulaski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. And Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo, no.
Garofalo, no. Madam Chair, that is 25 ayes and 2 nays.
There being 25 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails and House File 4670, as amended, is recommended for placement on the General Register. And with that, members, we have no further business, and there are no other meetings scheduled for this week, so just watch your emails in case anything comes up. And with that, we are adjourned.